I'd like to see a formal proceeding on the question that I'm going to ask for each the CFO as well as the Finance Committee. And I want that to be noted in the record as formal proceeding, not informal.
Well, when we come out of informal consideration, we can consider...
No, but I want the argument to be presented in a formal way.
Oh, okay. Well, anyhow, I'm just making a recommendation.
Okay.
I won't move it.
Well, I like Dave's recommendation, and so I'd like to go to the body. Can we go to informal consideration for about 15 minutes to entertain general questions for both the CFO and Dave and the NFC chair, and then move into formal action?
Okay.
Are there any objections to that?
That's okay.
So we're going to go ahead, and what we're entertaining right now are general questions, not specific to the motions or to the recommendations that are put forth by either the committee or the CFO.
We are not going to talk about the recommendations?
No, we could talk about the recommendations, but what we're not going to do is make amendments, try to wordsmith them. We're just going to ask general questions.
Okay.
Okay. Yes. If you'd like to introduce them right now, and then we'll go into informal discussion, but then I think Dave's logic in terms of going unit by unit makes a lot of sense.
Mine are not unit.
Okay.
I have some unit ones, but that's okay. They're not.
They're in his CFO report.
Okay,
so I have LaVarn, Rob, Bob, Sarv, Steve, and Fadi. Okay, LaVarn.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, I'd like to ask a question, then a follow-up. At the end of the fiscal year, where it shows, I think it was $900,000 cash at the end of the year for the budget for 06, what happens to that cash?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question.
Mike, please.
On the little table.
I think it's crucial to understanding how the finances of the network work. In the budget context, that's the budgeted number. But as you know, LaVarn, that is not necessarily the cash number. The cash flow will not necessarily work to the same number as the budget. But what will happen out of that 919, is that there any other APs that are flying through toward the end of the fiscal, that number will...
I would like you to... I'm trying to clarify for the rest of the board because we've been talking about this. So, I know all the nuances there. So if you could just kind of talk to the whole board.
Well, in the budget, if you're talking about a budget as opposed to a cash flow statement, we're now talking about the budget. A budget is just your best guess of how you're going to end the year, how much revenue you'll produce, what the expenses will be, and then there are a lot of unknowns. The number that we're working with is the $919,000. What are the things that can affect that number? That is, how will end the year a year from now, September 30th, 2006? If revenue is short, your 919 goes away, it goes down. If your expenses are higher than you guessed or anticipated, then the 919 goes down. We already know, as we go into this fiscal, that some of our revenue projections for certain stations have not been met. Already we know that there's going to be a variance to that number, and we aren't even, 1 or 2 months into the fiscal. Our accounts payable, any outstanding checks, any outstanding bills may affect that number from the prior fiscal because it carries through this fiscal impacting cash and perhaps the budget as well, especially if there were unbudgeted expenses in the last month of September. So the variability, it's between how much can that number change? Reasonable question. 3 to 5, anywhere. We know last year was 2%.
Can I just want to get to, okay, whatever the ending balance is on there after you take out AP, what happens to that cash at the end of the year? That's the question.
Yes, that's the question. If there is a positive cash number at the end of the fiscal, that money goes into your reserves. You've added to your prior year results.
So it goes back on the balance sheet.
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Okay, so I have a follow-up then. So if that cash goes back on the balance sheet and we are saying that each station has to produce a reserve at the end of the year, you have to have this budget waiver, then you're just taking money off the balance sheet to put it back on. So why would you want to do that?
Well, that's a balance sheet issue. But the issue...
That's a cash issue, because you're taking it from your cash, from your balance sheet, and then at the end of the year, whatever cash is left after all of the adjustments, you're going to put it back on the balance sheet. So why would you go through that exercise?
If you're a station that had, at the end of the fiscal, a negative outcome, you had some reserves, you would need to be borrowing from those reserves, prior year results, prior year cash.
Right.
If you had them.
Right.
If you had a surplus from a prior year and you ended the fiscal with $0, you would be borrowing from the prior year or savings, let's use that word.
But that's only if your expenses, including your cash and capital, which you've included, exceed your revenue. But if it nets out, then you wouldn't borrow anything, which your balance sheet would basically stay the same with some adjustments for AP, AR.
Well, we've had this discussion.
Because we talk about this, and we have talked about it, so I'm just trying to clarify what the position is and to try to understand, you know, what is the flow there, because that's a basic question. If you're going to take it off to put it back in to show that you have this one-month reserve on your income statement, and you're just going to eventually put it back on the balance sheet, I mean, it just seems like an exercise of having an income statement look very nice.
Does everybody understand what LeVarne just asked?
Don't speak.
Okay, what she's saying is that it's sort of related to what I said. That first column, the without waiver column, is an indication of the performance of the station actually over the course of the year, how much surplus it generated that year or how much ultimately deficit it generated that year. If you start adding surplus prior year into it in order to show a particular amount in the bottom line, you can't look at that bottom line and see how you actually changed over the course of the year. It'll say 1 month regardless. You could put $60,000 in surplus, or you could take $150,000, or in some stations' case, $355,000, and you don't see when you look at the bottom line how you actually did that year. You see an amount that is because you took money from the balance sheet, which was sitting in your bank at the beginning of the year, put it in the surplus prior year category. It ended up in your apparent bottom line, and then at the end of the year, as LeVarne says, you put it back in the balance sheet. And so on the question of clarity, it actually, and as Lonnie says, we discuss this all the time. I would say good 50% of National Finance Committee time is spent on this issue. And LeVarne's question is going to why that accounting procedure. Now, one of the things that came up during our discussions was that banks like to see positive bottom lines. But that raises the question of why do we care if banks like to see positive bottom lines? There may be other reasons, but it's for purposes of clarity, it's an issue. That cash and capital section, incidentally, is unusual. Most organizations don't have it. It includes not just the surplus prior year funds; it includes capital things that you're really doing out of. Many organizations might do out of savings; some do out of current year operations. But in terms of the work we need to do, it'll be very helpful to specify what your accounts are, how full they are, with what kind of money. There's another question implicit in this, which is a discussion has erupted about whether or not stations, quote, own their surpluses. Who owns a station's surpluses? That was the other piece of where does it go. It actually goes into the account of the station that generated the surplus. They've paid their central services. They have money left over. It goes in their bank account. Now there's a discussion about to whom does that belong. One of the things about it is, and people should be clear, our existing process requires this board to approve any spending of anybody's surplus. We approve it. So nobody gets to use that thing until we say you can use the money in that account. This other question of, well, what, might it go to other places is effectively a question about, you know, what happens beyond the 20% central services. I hope that made something clearer.
And let me just follow up. So it goes. Once we go through this exercise of what is cash, how you move from the balance sheet back to the balance sheet, and that all of it's here, believe there you should, that we should get to the point where we have 3 months of reserve. But how do you get it? By pulling things off the balance sheet and putting it back? Or do you make the hard decisions up front in your budget that your revenue and your expenses should be at that level to produce that reserve so that you can achieve it on your balance sheet? So that, you know, if you have to borrow from your reserve and you don't have that 1 to 3 months reserve, rather than borrowing from your reserve, perhaps you should make those decisions in your budget to produce that reserve without borrowing. So you would have to make the decisions on expenses and revenue to make that 1 month happen. And if that's not there, then I would suggest that your budgeting, that we're not really owning up to our fiduciary responsibility to produce that 1 month reserve. So you have to make the hard choices in your budget to make that reserve versus borrowing from your balance sheet.
Yes, Sonny.
That's an interesting point. let me just spin that out a little bit. True. But first of all, how did we get this cash and capital section? That's in the bottom of these financial statements. It was there when I arrived here. And I tried to take it out.
Lonnie, they want you to use the microphone.
Oh. Can you explain what cash and capital is?
Well, Pacifica, apparently, I looked back to see how long that section had been in use. I think it's been in use at least 6 years. When I got here, I asked, what is this? It's not standard. Banks don't understand it. Even people in accounting don't understand it. It's totally unusual. When I got the answer was, we want to know how much cash people, in fact, are taking out of savings, are taking. You want to pull it out? Yeah. The answer was, the board wanted to know, the finance committee, if people were using money from savings. They wanted to know that. They wanted to have that be shown every month, who was borrowing money from those reserves.
Can you define what cash and capital is?
Income statement.
We can't see any of that, Dave.
What are you doing, Dave?
If you go to your income statement, I'll just describe it for you. But after your excess income expense line, which is the normal thing that you see. If you look at your budget in any budget section, there is a thing at the end, toward the end of your budget, that says excess income expenses.
Oh.
And then below that,
before you get to your bottom line, there's a section called cash and capital. It includes the surplus prior year allocation, and it includes all the capital expenditures you make, which are not, you know, ordinary operating expenses. It's a tack on to the bottom of each unit. So if you look at your income statement in the book, that July income statement, look in any unit at the bottom after you get to excess income or expense, which is actually what you did during the year, then you add it on. And one of the issues is you can show like a lot of excess income in current year operations, but if you then spend it on capital improvements, you don't have it. So it's not left. You don't have it there to stick in your balance sheet. So people wanted to include an accounting for capital expenditures in the income statements and budgets, but they also wanted to include that money that you have to pull out to make those capital expenditures in it as well. So you're showing that you're not actually like losing $500,000 because you made $500,000 worth of capital expenditures. You actually pulled it off the balance sheet and into the budget that way. I think that's the rationale.
We have a question.
I don't know. I wasn't on the board.
I want to follow up because
we have a long stack, though. And
well,
so
I know. I asked the question, what is cash and capital?
Yes.
Did that
I'm
answer
looking
us?
For, not really. I'm looking for two things. I'm looking for what the chart of account says it is, and I'm looking at the description that is actually in our accounting manual. Cash and capital, that's all I'm asking for. Not what it does or anything. What is it? How do we describe it in the chart of accounts?
The cash and capital that Pacifica has used is not going to be in the chart of accounts. It's a totally unusual statement, and it's therefore it's not part of most accounting systems. I'm not sure if I know any other organization that uses a cash.
Is there a written description?
I've seen nothing.
Okay, that's all I wanted to
know.
Okay. Thank you, Lonnie and Dave. Rob?
My first question is, where are plans
that show what we're doing to increase our audience?
I'll try to answer from a strict financial point of view from what I see in budgets. Would that work?
Well, I mean, isn't that something that's going to assure our long-term financial health?
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right. I did in my opening statement said that we need to look at increasing our audience. And I had proposed, as you recall, a low-income membership strategy. And I think it's absolutely essential. We all know the issue. We need to maximize the audience, and we need to do a lot of different things to do that. There's programming. There's outreach. There is issues around how you do community work, training, volunteers. Yes, but where's the money? Very good issue.
So we're not investing in expanding our audience in this budget?
I would say no. Not specifically. Now, that brings up that whole issue of how do you find money in Pacifica to do the things we know we ought to be doing? And that's why I think a reserve policy is an issue that can be addressed to deal with a lot of unfunded but critical issues that are not in budgets, these budgets.
Well, why do some stations raise more money than others? I mean, you say, where is the money? Isn't it possible to raise more money if we do different things? Isn't there a relationship between what we put on the air and how we operate our stations and what our audience is and how many members we have and what money we earn? Shouldn't we be spending some time understanding how to manipulate those things?
Absolutely.
Why can't we invest in it?
I want to make a point about that. KPFK, for example, what some of the grief it got is because it's investing $100,000, which is basically it's investing $100,000 in some new things. News stringers, a training program for the community. We had an outreach allocation, but during the budget process, there was a Scrivener's error when we voted. It wasn't there. We'll be coming back for reforecasting. And we proposed a small amount of money, $5,000, for developing an RFP project to solicit proposals from the community. Now, we're invested. But the mandate to create a one-month reserve, sort of regardless of however much you had in the bank at the beginning of the year, without plans for using any of those reserves for investments, you know, is an open question as to whether it's wise. At our local station, under Eva's leadership and in collaboration with the board and the staff that's very much behind it, we are planning this year to do some new programs, which we think is going to increase our presence in the community and, as a result, cause a big increase in our income ultimately. But we decided to make that investment.
Okay, Bob? Oh, sorry, did you have a follow-up?
The second part is the other thing that I think we can do, and that's we can develop more diverse revenue sources. What are we doing to develop more diverse revenue sources? I'm talking about pursuing grants and foundations. I know KPFK actually has someone on staff that's doing that. They've made a number of grant applications and received some monies. There are major donor programs that we could explore. Merchandising on the Pacifica website. We've got lots of Pacifica things that we could use to develop revenue. We've got, you know, we could have pictures of Pacifica heroes, people like Rosa Parks, who was interviewed in 1956, okay? Rosa Parks was interviewed on the air in 1956 by KPFA. I mean, she's an early Pacifican. We don't know that. We're not telling the country who we are, and we're not allowing our stations to benefit from that. We're also not doing targeted mailings. We talked about labor. We don't have a relationship with labor anymore. I mean, we could if we focused on programming around their issues, but we don't do that. So I also don't see that we're investing in developing diverse sources of revenue. The station that I'm from, WPFW, spends over 30% of its revenue on development. And we fundamentally do pledge drives. Of that money, we spend over $200,000 on premiums. Now, we could make our own premiums, but we buy stuff from commercial companies and sell it to them. Okay? So, costs that we could control, we're not controlling. So, my concern is that we're not investing in expanding the audience. We're not investing in developing diverse sources of revenues. We should have incentive programs so that stations get rewarded for raising more money. I mean, we know the problem between National and the stations. National is like Count Dracula. Every time you see the National office, they're going to suck your blood. They want your money. So nobody wants to deal with National. National should be supplying incentives by saying, we've got grant programs so you can develop your cultural programming. We've got programs, we have money, so that you can develop your news and public affairs so that you can expand your audience. But we don't have that kind of a relationship. It's a dependency relationship. You know, and we also don't provide programs that will show our local station development staff how to do things other than pledge drives. Some do it on their own initiative, but we don't have something that helps, you know, one development staff learn from the things that other stations have done well. And it just seems to me that we know that times are going to get tough. I don't care what anybody says, with all the debts that we're building up in this country, the economy is not going to be in good shape. We know that we're going to have trouble attracting audiences, but we're particularly going to have trouble if we don't go after them. We have a message for them, and yet we're not asking ourselves, how do we take this message to a broader audience? And it seems to me that in the budget process, rather than arguing about how we move money from one pocket to the next, we really ought to have plans to say, how do we open up different taps of revenue, and how do we work with the stations to help them to understand what the potential audience is and how to get there.
Rob, can you turn some of that into some motions so that we can move them forward? Because there's some great ideas.
I made a huge list
of good ideas.
I think stations are doing those.
I would like folks to just not yell out. We do have a stack, and I'd like folks to just be respectful. Rob,
don't yell it out.
That's it.
Okay. We are in informal consideration right now, just so folks can remember, Bob.
Well, I really support the ideas that Rob is putting forward, and it goes back to the issues Arena has been putting on our table since I've been on the board all year, which is we need a focused group that looks at development strategy and tries to move forward the ideas that Rob has, and many of us have different pet projects or ideas, but we need to move them forward. And I think now that we're about to choose a new executive director, she or he will be able to lead that process, and we should task that person as one of their first responsibilities is to work with, I don't even know if we still have a development task force of this board, but maybe today we could reconstitute it and have that grouping meet with the new person once they're in office and try to come back with a plan by the January board meeting. But within that, I want to ask Lonnie to amplify on one line in your slide that you didn't have time to go through, which you mentioned to me yesterday, which I was very intrigued by. Membership services, such as things as offering insurance, like health insurance or life insurance, as an incentive to people to become a member of Pacifica. Could you say more about that?
Yeah. I think Casey and I had a conversation similar to it as well. It is the question of how to not only bring new revenues, and we certainly want to, but how to keep people we already have. I mean, that 50% turnover rate, it costs money to recruit new people. If we don't have to do it, it certainly saves a buck or two. But the idea, people in San Francisco, I was talking with some friends, and Casey is quite independently was having a similar kind of conversation. One thing, we are a membership-based organization, and we don't have a membership director for membership services. And other organizations are doing that. They're saying our members not only should be providing income to us, we should in fact be providing services to them. It's a way to build loyalty to the organization. It's a way to give back, but it also creates long-term revenue in as much as people don't leave you so quickly. What kinds of things are people doing? They're offering insurance. Insurance is fairly cheap, and you get great deals on a package product. I could go down a list of what people are doing. I won't do that, but affinity cards, finders clubs, information. Many people want information about that will helpful to them in their daily lives. So you have a hotline. Those kinds of services in the long term produce more revenue, and they're fairly cheap to do. How will it get paid for? It always comes up. For many folks, the paying an additional component of their membership fee would be worth it to them if they were getting some services that were not ordinarily available to them. And I'm thinking specifically about low-income members, people who would really be attracted to Pacifica if they felt this organization was providing something to them that all the organizations do not, or they're
healthcare.
Too expensive. Healthcare. I think that I wouldn't rule it out. I would not rule it out as a way to go, as a part of a membership package. Now, anyway, you could go on and on. We could develop the sense of sponsorship. You can ask members to sponsor other specific programs, sponsor other members. We just have to look into what membership services program could mean to Pacifica.
Thank you, Lonnie. Sarv?
Thank you, Lonnie, and thank you, Dave. I'm going to not go into detail of every accounting number, which account it should be and which shouldn't be, but I'm going to make some broad assumptions, and I'm going to ask you some questions on the basis of that. Is it true that my station at KPFA in Berkeley, given its demographic audience of comparable sizes of other sister stations, WBI New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, that we produce the most revenues of any station in the network? Is that correct?
Yes, they have.
All right. Then my next question is that also true that we have the most reserve of any station in
yes.
the network?
Yes.
So the assumption then is that that station is doing something right. Is that correct? Would that be a fair assumption? All right. Given on that basis, I'm going to get... I'll get on later when I get to the specific proposals that each one of you have proposed, you as a CFO and Dave as a chairman of the Finance Committee. I'll get to it. I'll follow on that basis and look at those motions that you presented, how they fit into that. And I'll leave it at that for the moment.
Thanks, Sarv. Steve?
I actually wasn't going to ask this, but now I'm really curious. Is it true that that station has the highest expenses?
Yes, Mr. Fitzgerald.
That's amazing.
I think there's some fantastic ideas that were brought up just now, and I'm hoping that they don't just, you know, disappear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we desperately need a strategic plan, and we clearly have the people on staff and on the board to do it. We just lack the will, I think. But as far as the reports, which I really appreciate, a couple questions come up. One is the station reserves. Are they sitting someplace, or is the network using them as working capital?
They're sitting in bank accounts for the most part, not really being used for operations. And the issue is, do we need a policy look at that situation for the needs we can identify?
So we could, as a network, if we had a strategic plan, decide to use some of the surpluses, basically borrow our own money for strategic development?
Yes.
And the other question, well, this is great. I love it. And the other question I had was, I don't understand why we don't have answers to the questions that we that are being asked with respect to budget categories and so forth, because I assume that when checks are written, the accounting software we have is assigning expenses in much more detailed categories than we see in these master budget sheets. So that I don't understand why we can't have a report generated relatively quickly that says how much did this board meeting cost, or how much are we spending on cab fares, or you know what it might be. Why do we have such general figures and no way to answer questions when we have the information?
Well, you know, I don't accept that generalization that we don't, that's not given. We do know how much cab fare is. We do know how much each board meeting costs. And it is, and if you look at the budget categories, there's a subcategory for board expenses for every month published. So you can, it's there in the income statement that's published every year, every month. What was referred to was the ability to see in a programmatic way how much each, say, program costs us, or see how much each, say, development costs us, the salaries that might attach to it. I have heard that concern, and I'm working on it.
And to take it out of the general, the very specific question that I did have was, how much does the affiliates program cost? What's the budget for our cost of providing services to affiliates, and what is the revenue that we gain from the affiliates to do it? And I was unable to get an answer to that question.
Well, the affiliates program is not a department. So in accounting, it's not a department. So it's really one person working with an external groups. So it's not, you could have to pull that information together. And what you would do is you'd look to see what the expenses were to run or interface with the affiliates. It would include things like the cost of GRC meetings, Ursula salary, cost for technical support.
I understand all that,
yeah.
But I would just like to see it.
Yeah.
I know what the components would be. I'd like to see what it's costing.
All right, you would like a report on that.
And I don't mean to privilege my request. I'm sure that each of us as directors have similar concerns. And my concern includes not overburdening you and the national staff. So I'm not looking for a specific answer to my specific question. I'm looking for a more of a systematic response to the general problem that we have, which is that faced with, and as we'll see as I was looking through the board packets, serious questions about the network's ability to deliver services that are being promised. I can't, as a director, really engage with that question because I have no idea what it's really costing and no ability to evaluate where the problems might be in delivering those services. Yet I have to answer to the affiliates as to why there's 15 minutes of dead air and what Pacific is doing about it. I have to say, yeah, I don't know. I have thousands of pages of information, but I actually don't have an answer to your question. And I'm not trying to put you on the spot about my specific concern. Really, my question honestly is, if the accounting software is providing this information when the funds are being expended, can't we come up with a reporting format that's going to allow us to recover that information in a way that's not going to burden the national staff, which clearly we don't want to do?
Well, that is under discussion in finance. We're very, very well aware of that concern. I think that, you know, for the short term, I would be interested if people had specific reports gathering information together. Now, you say, why isn't that in the accounting system? Well, I sad to say it's not in there on that basis. But the information would have to be gleaned from the accounting system and the report made for you. Now, if there are other reports that people need, willing to entertain, you know, the request for those reports. Simultaneously, the Finance Committee and I are working together to see if the formats, that standardized formats they're working from, can be improved to answer those questions routinely. So, yes, we are aware of that as a concern.
Okay. And, I just wanted to introduce that because I will be following through on that, but I want to make sure that the board and the staff understands it's not based on my particular concern, because I know there are 22 other people who all have their own particular concerns, yeah. And you're at the focal point of all of them. And so I'd like the organization as a whole to come up with a way of providing those answers that doesn't put you on the spot and create a contentious environment between the board and the staff.
Well, I think the first step is to see what the needs are and come back with, we can do this, this, and this.
Okay. Thank you very much for your report.
I'd be happy to do that. I don't want to feel folks feel frustrated they can't get it. So.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. Lonnie Plotty.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Lonnie, the budget that's before us does include the added 3% to central services. That was added several years back to retire debt, right?
Well, you know, that is a point of contention.
That it actually exists or that it was added because of that reason?
Yeah. The reasons, it's been there since I've been here. And what I've been told is that I've been told several stories about what the history was. So I don't profess to know what the history is. And whether it was there for legal debt or whether it was there to retire for actual costs, whatever the reason is. Now, your question was, is it in the current budget? The answer is yes.
Okay, now, the reason I bring this up, and I do have several regarding this, and it kind of follows a bit of what Rob had mentioned earlier, is that programming. National had programs in the past, and now there aren't really a whole lot of programs that National provides. Hold on. In the same caliber, there is a headline news, but there is no news department, for example, at National. That's an FSRN that we have right now, which is not Pacifica. It's paid for by Pacifica, correct?
Paid for by the station. From the station.
I understand. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is when is there going to be a discussion during these budget hearings over this 3% that we need to resolve? It went from 15 to 17, 17 to 20, but the amount of national programming has gone down. And I have a problem with that. I'm from KPFA, and yes, Sarv, you're right. I think KPFA does generate more, the most amount of revenue for any one station. But at the same time, we are well over budgeted and overstaffed. We have, what Steve said, we have the largest staff and needs to be reduced or somehow reconfigured over time. I think it's just went crazy that it shot up, and unfortunately we never controlled it. Inside the KPFA budget, there's a line item somewhere for a paid pitcher, someone to pitch at the fund drives.
Information. How much money is that?
$1,500. Thing is, it's still there. The fact is that we constantly increase.
Thank you. We got it.
It's the concept, and thanks for interrupting. The last thing is something I brought up at the Berkeley PNB in June, and that's that National does owe KPFA money. And we talked about it then, and we haven't yet actually had a discussion, and it wasn't brought up over here at the time. We obviously disagreed on that.
How much?
Well, in my opinion, it was 1.2, but that's...
Oh, yeah.
But these are issues I think need to be addressed, and I'm hoping that you would address some of these things. What do you think of the KPFA staffing? What do you think of the $1.2 million? What do you think of national programming? Those are three things that I feel are critical. I'd like you to address.
Well, that list is very short. I'll do my best. Well, you know, I think on national programming, National Office has produced national programming. As you know, just recently the Roberts hearings were covered. We covered, I think, 55 national programming programs last year. Everything from the Republican National, the Democrats. We had 11 particular productions in 11 states. We went to our 10-10-10 program, 10 programs in 10 states in the 10 weeks. We use those funds for national programming. We're going to cover the Myers hearings, did some work around Katrina, work with the stations, too, in terms of producing national broadcasts. True, don't have right now a national news bureau in the sense of the old PNP, which was
PNN?
PNN. Pacifica News. But that's under discussion. There is a need, and I think some of the other folks here had ideas about how to incentivize and work with the stations around producing a joint local national news broadcast, expanding from beyond where we are. So that is on the table for discussion. In fact, there is a proposal around how to get that done. When we will have the discussion on 15 to 17 to 20, you know,
17.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think that that this board ought to entertain a retreat around finance issues. As part of the implementation process, because many times 2 or 3 hours, once a year, may not be enough for us to go into programmatic issues in depth. So I would propose that as part of the budgeting process, that we get together as a board, go over the budget, preferably prior to, so the board can have input on programs that it feels are critical to the network, and spend a day. That's what many boards do. They just go into retreat one day and look at everything in great detail, get all the questions answered, and they adopt a board calendar to address those issues. So nobody feels that I brought this issue up 3 months ago and it got dropped, you know. So what many boards do is they calendarize all the issues that these items are going to get dealt with at this board meeting so that everybody knows that their issue will be dealt with and discussed. So I think that's one way to do it. It's hard to do it, as you know, 3 hours in a year. This is what we got here, about 3 hours in a year to go over the entire budget. That's going to leave a lot of us with questions.
And Berkeley's $1.2
million? Well, that keeps coming up.
I won't let it down.
what Friday's referring to is, I think I did a presentation on it at the June board.
Yes.
But what it is going back to 01-02, during the battle period, the hijacking period, whatever, the accounts were such that all debt were booked as loans to the stations. And on the books, KPFA is owed $1.2 million. However, what our auditors have said and will do, and it will come to this board, is that resulted only from not charging the stations for costs during that period. Because stations wouldn't put it in their books. They wouldn't do it. There were costs for accounting, costs for security, and costs for legal that never was allocated to any station. They're all put on the books of the national office as loans from the station. Now, as I mentioned, the auditor will come in, and we do have a proposal to allocate those expenses, and the board will have to decide three things. Whether or not to leave it exactly like it is on the books. You can have the $1.2 million on the books, but you will never be paid. That's one option. Leave it exactly like it is. The other option is to allocate those expenses using a methodology that the auditors have suggested and one we have, and I think we did send some out to the audit committee, and have the board decide. Do you want to allocate those expenses? No real money will change hands. It's just the book worth of each station will change. And let the board make that decision. The auditor is coming in November 15th, and that process will start. And then we'll send out a proposed the options in terms of how the board can vote on what it wants to do. What will be the outcome? The outcome is that KPFA, instead of being owed $1.2 million by the national office largely, there, if that reallocation of expenses formula is accepted, it would be like $250,000.
So where's the rationale? I mean, that makes no reason. There is no reason in that. I can't see the reason, at least. I'm generally a reasonable person. I would hope that not only the KPFA management will be involved, but delegates from KPFA will be involved in that. With the whole process, because I do expect $1.2 million.
Point of information is what you're saying is in that inter audit transfer report that was done to the audit committee, many of those transfers were actually. Let me see if I understand this correctly. So you're saying that we supposedly, the national office owes KPFA, but during that transition period or that troublesome period, national office was not levying from any of the stations?
Yeah, some of the stations in many cases were not paying central services
at all.
In some cases, they weren't keeping the books or the revenue that they were receiving. In some cases, they booked every item as a loan to the national office because they were protesting against the national office. So things that should have been charged to the stations, they refused to do it that way. In the books, they booked it as a loan. And finally, a lot of the expenses connected with that whole battle for security, for accounting, never actually charged back to the stations with any kind of formula, a fair way of...
But following up on Teresa's comment, thank you, Teresa, I mean... We don't know that until there's an investigation, and so we can't say that they booked it as a loan when it was not a loan or what have you. We have no clue until there is that investigation. And so that won't start until the 15th of November.
It's in the accounts, how they booked it. It's right in the GL. It's right in the accounting system, how they booked it. So there's no no confusion over how it was booked. It's a question of whether it was booked appropriately.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Okay.
I'm.
I just want to point out to folks that we have 33 minutes left on this agenda item. We still have to go through and approve each unit budget. So I am going to start timing, folks.
Okay.
Not with you. I'm going to go through the stack. I have Dave, Zarina, and William who have not spoken.
Okay,
so
now I'm not talking as the National Finance Committee representative. I'm talking as Dave. Hey, William. On the question of investing and services we might provide that Rob raised, I want to address him. I mean, one such service I think that would make a lot of sense is providing wireless access. An access point costs $100. You install it at a community center with whom you have a relationship. You provide wireless access to the community in that area, and it also saves us money on digital distribution because you beam one copy of a program to that access point, and that can serve all your members in an area. So you cut your bandwidth costs, and over time, you build a network of wireless providers. Brian, I saw the other day on the Verizon network. What if people in any of our signal areas could jump on the Pacifica network to get their internet service, and that would help build an infrastructure for our long-term digital distribution plans that would cut our costs. So that's one kind of thing that could be done. Why isn't it done? Because Pacifica stations, Fadi mentioned we pay a 20% central services fee, plus we are required to generate this surplus, and that's 1 month. So 1 month, about 8%. On top of that, so if you take the 20% plus the 8%, and now you add the money you have to pay for FSRN out of your restricted funds, you're talking almost more than 30% of the money you raise isn't available to you, unlike other stations around the network. So, and if a lot of this is surplus for the purpose of having surplus, then you've got this huge drain that never lets you do strategic planning investment. The political problem in our network about the investment is some stations have big surpluses and others have littles, and a couple in one at least now has a deficit. And so the fight is, well, we're already paying our 20%. You want us to pay even more, and then, you know, so you're using our surplus, and Ambrose has raised this point. But there is a legitimate political problem when stations are pursuing completely different models and completely different markets and all the rest of it. So somehow we have to resolve that issue. It's a lot of money with no planning. And the big thing is, if a station wants to use its own surpluses creatively, you know, how much of that should be under their autonomy? I want to make one other point about what Steve said about the budget. It's not just salary allocation that makes it hard for him to tell you what the affiliates program costs, because national office has an administrative category. Well, he can't just off the top of his hand tell you how much of those administrative line expenses went into affiliates, faxing or all those other expenses. He can't tell you, you know, how much of mailing was necessary, might have been involved with that. There might be development expenses. They're folded into that unit's line items, and they don't get allocated. So people, the percent of each of these things doesn't necessarily get allocated because it's not a program, as he said. So one of the things that this board really, I think, may need to mandate is that we break things out into useful categories, like how much do we spend on financial monitoring? How much do we spend on governance? How much do we spend on affiliates, digital distribution, and programming? I want to finish with the question of programming. Fadi pointed out that in 1999 we spent 17%, stations had a 17% levy on central services, and that paid for PNN and Democracy Now! Now we have a 20% levy. It no longer pays for the new service. That comes out of the restricted portion of the grant. And stations also pay bill backs. Lonnie mentioned some national programming, but some of that was underwritten by local stations who got sent bills after the fact. Now, I don't think that was a vast amount of money, but one of the problems we've got is the national office is the only unit that doesn't use volunteer power. We get a lot of our work done with volunteer power, but the national unit doesn't use any, and the salaries in the national unit are higher for every job than comparable work being done at the stations. So the national office, when it tries to do more work than it's already doing, has greater expenses than any other unit of the network to produce something on the ground. And that's a problem we're going to have to grapple with in some long-term planning, and what Lonnie says is true. We can't get away with 3 hours to discuss this. A year, we have to talk about, you know, how are we going to staff the network long term? How are we going to have a national unit that is makes efficient use of funds and serves the stations rather than, you know, the way Rob characterized it? So I hope the motion comes forward to do that. The problem with the way our board turns over is the January meeting would be a nice time to do it, but we may have new board members and it'll be hard for them to absorb all this. But I fully support Lonnie's proposal. We have to deal with these things, otherwise we're just going to be tearing at each other for a long time about whose money is it.
Okay. I just want to follow up on what Rob and Dave, and thank you, Bob, for mentioning something that I've been mentioning every time I come to PMB meeting. And I appreciate what you have said, Lonnie, particularly around the issue of membership services and the need for an organization as ours to even have a membership, a national membership director, and a person and people who understand all the kinds of services that are available if you join Costco or, if I have to say, Sam's Club, but I don't want to. But you know what I'm talking about, okay? I had to raise my voice because you know what I'm talking about. That's why I mentioned Sam's or any other group that has the offerings. I've heard Ambrose mention many meetings ago about the need for something like a credit union and the fact that we can do all of those kinds of things. We can do all of those things, but where I see some of the problem is not the money, 20%, 30%, or whatever is spent with the national and on and on. It's the way we conduct our meetings and how we conduct our telephone meetings and how there are issues that get, we don't go back to how can we offer services to our listeners because we're dealing with motions that then become emotional. And we are not dealing with what we know many of us came on these boards for as a listener or even with the staff. We just deal, I mean, if Finance Committee, Audit Committee, and some of the others, and I'm looking at the different ones that have nothing to do really with programming, but a lot to do with trying to keep the network viable and functioning, but nothing to do with programming where the listeners really are like disinterested. They don't really care. They want to know what's going on with their money, but they're not going to sit in and listen to some of those long 2, 3, 4, 5 hour meetings. And what are you all talking about for all that time? Mostly it's stuff that because you're not generating any money, you're dealing with the money that's coming in from the listeners. So what you're doing is looking at the charts and the sheets. And I was married to a certified public accountant, first marriage. And you know, so I watched what he did sometimes, and he was very much into auditing other people's books, but he couldn't handle our little account, our little home account. That happens. So when I think as a listener, what do I want from Pacifica? I want good programming. I want more shows than just Democracy Now on a national level. Yeah. I want to be able to say, okay, I belong to Pacifica, I belong to WPFW or KPFA or whatever, and they offer insurance, they offer prepaid legal, they offer health benefits. There is nothing that says we can't do all of that. And considering that most of you feel that the administration that's in office right now is not doing that for the, you know, the masses of people. Things like Katrina, they're going to happen because that's a natural situation. But what we can take care of on the human level is where are we? Where are we? We're still talking about, I mean, I'm not going to sit, the reason I chose not to be on finance or any of those committees that are dealing with most of the stuff that you deal with
is because I'm not going to waste my time every week trying to deal with the same budget, talking about, well, you're not talking about where to shift it to or what else you're going to do with it. Again, keep in mind, you don't bring the money in. The listeners bring the money in, okay? So what we really need to do is to get more involved with development, national fundraising, membership services. And I just had to say, this is our membership card from WPFW, where you can go to restaurants and you can go to car places and a number, and here's the book that goes along with it. That's what we do. We offer things like a membership card so that people can feel like they bought into something other than somebody's book or some CD. That's a premium. Hey, I can get that from Amazon or go to the bookstores that I deal with in the D.C. area. So I know I'm a little longer than what I had planned on speaking, but you know me, I do one time. And so my thing is, we need to start looking at what can we offer to the listeners as services other than all your talk during the meetings, whether it be PMB or the LSB. Why do we not get enough people, listeners, to come to our meetings? Because they've heard. They've heard what we're doing. They're like, I'm not going to sit up there and listen to those people fussing with each other every month or every 2 weeks or however often you have your meetings. If we have something to offer people, then we have more of an opportunity to get people to buy into what Pacifica's original mission was all about. Thank you.
I'd like to use this opportunity as a point of personal privilege. I think that's the difference between running a radio station or a radio network and building a movement. And I think that's a direction that many of us want to see us go.
Thank you.
William?
Building a movement and running a radio network are so similar, though, but I don't think that the structure that we have within this network is doing either.
just for the last two.
I apologize for being late. I'm still on California time, evidently, but I will say this, is that the structure that we operate under isn't accessible. A meeting that starts at 8:30 in the morning and ends at 6:30 in the evening is not practical. So I'm glad I came in when I did, because it seems like that's what we're talking about, is the difference between sustaining this network and not. And I heard a little bit about, and I came late, so forgive me if I'm being redundant. I heard a little bit out in the green room about the discussion around how there's too many staff at KPFA, and it just seems not so democratic that the budget was passed at a local station, and here we are at the national board discussing, you know, item by item what's going on in that budget. So I thought that the structures were created for a specific reason, and if we're going to sit here and go line item by line item through each station's budget, I'd like to be aware of it. I have it here. I can read it. I can ask questions. All of the appropriate people are here. But if there isn't a solid basis for making an action on the budget, I would encourage members not to do so. And if we're going to be looking at anything at this meeting or in future meetings, it would be helpful if we looked at a streamlined way to access the stations. Like, we talk about how we could utilize volunteer labor, but every station does so in a different manner. And we've got an HR director that's looking at paid positions. It'd be great. And we're talking about a membership services director. It would be really great if we could look at how we utilize labor at each station. But I don't think that the way to do that is by suggesting that stations should cut staff. So that's one thing. I think that there's a viable, we're talking about offering services like insurance or, you know, the different commodities that you were all speaking of offering to our membership. it would be great if we could just start by offering what most stations have, what Clear Channel has. They have foot soldiers, it's like what I like to call their street teams. But most stations have a street team, and that's just as easy as putting out an advertisement on our website saying that we're looking for college students to do internships. And you don't have to pay them. They do it for school credit, and a lot of them can work out. I mean, all five stations are in markets where there's, you know, great broadcasting programs at the colleges that are nearby, and it would be really great if we could utilize, you know, volunteers going out and spreading our brand name out there. And I mean, we talk about outreach and involving our listenership, but our listenership tends to skew a bit older than most college students. And if we had college students in conjunction with our listenership, we'd have a more diverse team of folks out pulling people in. So I guess that's something to think about. But I really wish that we could have the discussion about structures rather than looking at items line item by line item, because to me, I don't know the lay of the land in each of these stations. Just because we have a board meeting in each market every year doesn't mean that I'm aware of like what it means to cut a halftime position at WBAI or PFW. And it would be really great if the LSBs could have some training so that there isn't such division on the LSBs, so that they can't pass a budget without a national board delegate coming to the meeting and trying to, you know, rewrite the budget, you know, after it's been passed by the LSBs. So I think it's just something to think about.